This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Because everyone noticed that when I came on, the viewership went from 300 to 500, and Jay Rich made the comment that it's like me on the A-Team. Like, both things are popular, but I don't talk on either show, yet they're popular, so...
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And they're like, fuck.
How does that go?
Bang! Fuck.
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I just like, I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck, and then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, The A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 284 of The A-Team Podcast. This is KYT, once again, with two of my best friends. One who just got back from a little trip. How's it going, Matt?
Phew! I'm good. I'm tired. It was a crazy weekend, but I'm back. And looking forward to more.
All right. My other friend who's has this crazy, insane work schedule. I didn't even bother to calculate exactly how many hours he had to work this week. Jay motherfucking Boosh.
Yo.
I looked at it. You sent it to me. I'm like, holy fuck.
So, Jay, what is your new schedule?
I don't have one. I have a schedule for this week.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was just some insane...
Yeah, like hours? I worked like 16 hours yesterday. I had today off, and then I work tomorrow regular. And then I think I work Thursday night and Thursday day, and then I have Friday off, and then I work like fucking 24 hours between Saturday and Sunday.
All right. Sounds fun.
I think he tweeted how you had to work, nap for 3 hours, and go back to work. So pretty fucking grueling.
Yeah, that was fucking sweet. And then, like, all we did was, like, sit in the truck and watch these guys do locates last night. But you can't sleep, and you can't, like, not be there. And then, like, on Thursday, we're going to take those locates and then have to do a whole bunch of work in the dark. That's always fun.
Locates? What are locates?
So, like, when you dig in the ground, there's these guys that walk around with, like, fucking metal detectors. And they detect,
locates
and wires and shit so that you don't dig them up when you're trenching and shit.
So do you like it better than your old job?
Yes, obviously.
Okay.
My old job was shit. The work was fine. And also, we didn't do a lot of work, so that was also fine. But,
when you weren't being left somewhere, like, or when you weren't waiting for a boss or whatever.
Yeah, it was like working for Satan.
Matt, you were talking about this trip that actually got me excited, because we were talking about the whole coverage and how to improve it and our thoughts, of course. But is there anything you could tell us that isn't super hush-hush about your weekend?
Yes. There are some things that I can make. So it's really funny. I can speak in the super general and the super specific. Like, I can talk about what I did, and I can talk about what the weekend was about. But a lot of the specific stuff that came from WotC, I cannot talk about. So what that means is, basically on the podcast, I'll give you guys kind of an overview of how the weekend went. And then in my article this week, I'm going to touch on a lot of the specifics of what I saw that were going to improve, what I did, and things like that. Basically, because I want this information to get out to you guys, but I want it to get out in a manner that can be approved by WotC fairly easily. So rather than record all this stuff and then send them the file and whatever, I'm just going to produce an article and then send it to Greg and my boss and basically ask for approval to find out what needs to be redacted, what I can and can't say. Generally, though, I can tell you it was a smashing success of a weekend. It was exactly what our coverage team needed. Why I say that? Because there were a lot of things that we don't do that a lot of the other coverage teams do. And to get it, to get this out first so that everybody kind of understands what this weekend was, it was not a summit of sorts where everybody from anybody who's anybody in coverage, period, was invited. It was actually specifically a training and meet and greet and team building weekend for the contractors specifically hired by WotC. So it wasn't that I know we got some Twitter flack because certain people weren't invited or whatever.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was a big thing. I'm not going to make it a big thing because it's really not. When Reddit agrees that it's not a big thing, it's not a big thing.
All right.
But basically, that's what it was. It wasn't a meeting to assemble all of the greatest minds in coverage across the Magic multiverse. It was just for us WotC folk to meet each other for the first time, to address a lot of the concerns that we've had, to work in a sandbox environment so that we can implement new stuff, so that we can make coverage better on a weekend that doesn't have a GP. So, for example, how it kind of works is that we set up Friday, and then we do the show, and then we pack up, and then we leave. Now, as you might know, there's not a whole lot of room for innovation if we're constantly having to put together shows. You know, if we don't have one of the things that I realized this weekend that Star City and Channel Fireball have on WotC's coverage team is that they have a store in which they can centralize their coverage team and centralize their equipment for low cost, and then they can set it up and basically run mock events. If that makes sense. They have the Channel Fireball store where they can set up all of their equipment, and all of the coverage team basically lives there, and they can work it out and figure out all sorts of crazy technical innovations that are really awesome. And the same thing can be said for Star City Games. That's why they are so successful. And I realized this weekend, we don't have that. We have our three main technical producers live in Atlanta, Chicago, and the UK. And most of our equipment, we have a couple kits that kind of go around to different GPs depending on where they are in the world. And we can't really assemble that all in one place without flying somebody in, shipping that equipment wherever it needs to go. So basically, this weekend was incredibly important for that reason. We came up with some cool technical stuff, some new graphics things that we're going to implement. I can't, like I said, I won't talk about more specifics unless I get approval. On the production side, I myself really got to hash out my ideas for coverage and camera angles and what we could be doing. And I'm kind of actually also excited, I am excited because I presented a couple things that could be done in the future for different streaming audits, different streaming offerings for different Magic audiences.
Sweet. Did you throw in your little chess thing?
Yeah. They solicited a lot of feedback from us before to kind of guide the coverage conference. And okay, one of those things were, are we considered an esport or whatever? I definitely told them that we are not. And a lot of the coverage team agrees and compares Magic to golf. There's, you know, golf, you can play it. Anybody can play it. If you're good enough, you can be part of the pro tour. Basically, you can play professional golf. And there's really not a big age gap. You know, like, for example, if you're watching professional basketball or football, there's definitely a shelf life to your career. But golf has a much longer shelf life. You can be much older and be very good at golf. It's the same thing can be said for Magic. You can be 13 and be good at Magic, or you can be 60 and good at Magic.
That's true. Do you mean like using that as...
Oh, golf.
How to improve? Is that a comparison to be used to see where coverage can be improved, or you're talking about something else here?
A little bit of both, because basically we look for, you know, we look for all sorts of ideas from all over the place. We look for sports ideas from sports coverage. We look for ideas from esports coverage, and we just have to find where the similarities lie in our coverage and our offering. So when you think of Magic, the two things that come to mind for us are golf and chess, among other esports. Some, like I said, Magic Online can be considered an esport, but Paper Magic is very much it's a slower game. It's a much more sedentary streaming. It's not as exciting as watching shit blow up on a League of Legends stream or whatever. And it's not a team sport. It's individual, like golf, like chess.
Right, right.
So that was kind of a tangent. But that's kind of where we are mentally, is that. We're looking for the similarities that we have in various other sports and coverage things. But yeah, we had multiple tracks for the different coverage areas. It was text coverage had their own thing, and commentary and broadcast coverage had their own thing. And then the technical production side, we had our own thing, and it was really great. It was great just being able to actually be together reminded us that we are a group of professionals who are very inspired and very creative and very intelligent and have a lot to offer. And as a group, we are, it kind of empowers you because you're not alone, and you know that other people have your back, and you know that you can actually reach out to people and not feel like you're bothering somebody that you have never spoken to before.
Sweet. I got a few questions for you.
Sure.
Number one, was Neil Rigby invited?
Neil Rigby was invited.
Okay. did he come out?
Yeah. We had a pretty funny story of Neil Rigby. So we were doing Eternal Masters drafts, and one of the things that we do at the end is we team draft and then we play Italian game. Are you guys familiar with Italian game?
No.
Okay.
No.
Basically how it works is, so you draft, you do your 6-person or your 8-person pod, and then you split up into randomized teams. So you hand out 4 islands and 4 swamps or whatever. And the islands are on one team, the swamps are on one. It's basically a way to team up, to combine your efforts in deck building and then in playing, so that you have somebody coming over invested in your match so that they can help you. And it kind of adds a really cool, really fun dynamic to an otherwise pretty generic draft.
So you're just talking about team drafting?
Yes.
But did you say like Italian drafting?
Or something? No. That's I'm getting to that.
Oh, okay.
So what we do is we break up into teams, and then we play for the team that wins gets the rares and foils. So what you do with those rares and foils, at the end, the winning team puts them all face down and then shuffles them up into one big pile. And then you draw a card from that pile, and the highest casting cost card wins those cards. So, for example, if, say, us three are on a team, we are at the end, we've won our draft. We have higher combined wins than the other team does. We get to pick from the pile of rares and foils. And say, Jay, you pull a 4 casting cost card, I pull a land, and KYT pulls a 2 casting cost card, you get those 2 cards. You get those 3 cards.
Because 4 is bigger than 2.
And 0.
Oh, shit.
So where it gets interesting is ties. So if you tie, you basically just go again.
Like war.
Correct. But so we are drafting in our pod. Our pod.
I just want to say, Matt, that I've done this before. I just didn't know that was what it was.
Yeah, it's called the Italian game.
Yeah. Why is it called the Italian game? That sounds racist.
I have no idea. But I'm fairly certain it's not racist. Anyway, so ties are interesting. And in our pod, the big ticket item is a foil wasteland. So, Neil Rigby, we're playing. 3 picks in, he wins the foil wasteland despite going 0-3. We carry him. I go 3-0. And I can't remember who else is on our team. But Rig gets the foil wasteland. But, so it's down to the last 2 cards. And me and BDM are the two people left. So we pull our 2 cards. I pull a Phyrexian Ingester, and he pulls a Regal Force. Now, you might not immediately know this, but they both have a 7 casting cost. So we're like, okay, so I guess it's a tie or whatever. And then Rigby goes, ah, damn it. And we look at him, we're like, what? He's like, we got to do the whole thing over again. You tied. We're like, what? And he basically says that if you tie on the very last pick, you have to redo the whole thing. So in the process, his honesty, the Rig rule now that we're calling it, screws himself out of the foil wasteland, BDM gets it, and we now have a new Italian game rule where if you tie at the very last pick, you get you have to redo the whole thing. So, but that's Rigby for you, degenerate gambler, heavy drinker, super fun, super fun dude to be around. I love the guy. We always have great conversations. We had long conversations about different decks, and dude's been on the Pro Tour a bunch of times.
A crap ton of times. Yeah. Like more than I could ever guess.
Yeah.
Way more than me. Way more than me. So, impressive dude. And he's a hilarious guy.
Oh, yeah.
My last question on the whole coverage thing, Matt, is earlier you brought in the whole challenge, and that's something I wholeheartedly agree with. Like SCG, it's always Cedric, and they're constantly, not just Cedric, but the same team. It's more centralized in how they do it. Mm-hmm. So when you say that you've seen this challenge, are you suggesting that you're going to have more of these meetings to share knowledge? To be able to catch up to that, to have that same
continuity.
Come on, I can't even pronounce it.
I certainly hope so. I think it was incredibly helpful. And even if we only do smaller group gatherings, especially for the technical crew who work with the TriCaster and who basically just need that, we need that time if we want to innovate. Like that's just a reality. We're only able to do the things that we are going to be able to do going forward because we got together in this sandbox environment and did that this weekend. So I'm hoping that they do it again next year and then like once every 2 years or so. But we definitely, I think as a WotC coverage team, we need that. And definitely I'm going to communicate all of that stuff. I have a list of ideas a mile long to send to all of the people that are important to this process, and I definitely am excited for the future of WotC coverage.
Sweet. I think I'm hearing this. It's a positive. I think all everyone wants to hear all I want to hear is that something is being done and being improved upon, being discussed even, and having you as part of that. I'm pretty happy about what I'm hearing. So
yeah, we're not blind to the issues. That's the other thing that I want to get clear on the podcast and to our listener audience. We're not blind to the problems. We're also not blind to what Channel Fireball and Star City does. One of the accusations that was thrown at us was that we don't watch that coverage, which is just absurd. We're 45 Magic players who are incredibly invested in the health of the game, in paying attention to tournaments and all of this stuff. You think we don't watch that stuff? I just don't, it just does not make any sense. I mean, I think people are just,
I mean, I think one thing interesting that doesn't make any sense is, like, I think people feel like if you did watch that coverage, then it would be a lot more obvious and you would change a lot of stuff a lot quicker. So it could seem like you guys don't watch it or don't pay attention because you're so much worse. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I think that. I'm just saying, like, that's like,
sure. And one accusation.
Yeah. I think, like, another issue too is that time you tell a Magic player to do something, like, you're like, hey, you try this in your cube. Hey, why don't you draft this way? Hey, you should play one less land. Hey, you should loot here for sure. All they do is argue. So when you say to, like, the Wizards coverage, like, hey, you should do this differently, I don't think I've ever heard any of them say, like, wow, that's a really great idea. I think what I'll do is consider that and take that back to the team so that we can make improvements. What they say is, like, no, for these reasons. No.
Okay. Well, there is definitely some give and take there, because I do understand that if perhaps people address the wrong people at the wrong time, they can absolutely get that response. I will let you all know that if you send me your feedback, I am literally copy and pasting every tweet and every email I get and forwarding it on to the people that need to hear it. It's a very important to me that we get ideas from everywhere, because you never know when that one awesome idea is going to hit. And you never know, we worry about so many other things that sometimes things get overlooked. That's just how things work. And really, when it comes to WotC, we have a ton of stuff that we want to do, but we have also a lot of problems that aren't apparent on the surface. Two of those things, for example, are budgetary concerns, because we only have so much manpower or people power. We only have so many employees, and we only have so much time that we all have these awesome things that we want to do, but it's frankly just coming up with the money to do that. And then also that we, as WotC, does not have the capacity that Star City and Channel Fireball have as tournament organizers to dictate a lot of the things that they need to dictate to the convention centers. WotC basically works with TOs to situate and organize our coverage and to get our needs met. But Channel Fireball and Star City, they have the luxury of basically being the TO and getting everything that their coverage team wants.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, that's another hurdle that the WotC coverage team has that you guys might not know that the Star City games and Channel Fireball crews don't.
No, that totally makes sense to me as someone who was part of organizing a GP. There's definitely a lot of different challenges and, like, you know, WotC comes in, not just in, like, just coverage, just everything as a whole, whether it be prize support and other things like that. There's a lot of work, communication between, like, face-to-face games and Wizards for the GP that, you know, these other things don't have to, other places don't have to worry about. But moving on to another topic, this past weekend, there was a lot of Magic events in Montreal. But on Saturday, I went to see UFC Ottawa. I said, fuck it to the WMCQ. I said, fuck it to WMCQ, even though I've been talking about this show on this show so many times that my dream is to represent Canada. Ultimately, I said, fuck it, because variance is too high. I'd rather go to a UFC event that I really want to see, that I'm going to enjoy probably for sure, than, you know, coming up short, likely coming up short at WMCQ. And it was awesome. It was my first, actually, sorry, it was my second event, but my first one with a group of friends. I had gone to see something in Vegas, but this was the first time I went to see it with Frankie Richard, with Sean Bocconi, famous Jay Bush hater, Sean Bocconi. I saw it with Dave Brunet.
Talking shit.
No, not too much shit. Andrew Mangini was also there, and it was not every fight was great. The main event ended up being sort of like a chess match type of fight, so it got a lot of boos, and you know, you get one of those I don't know what the term is, when couch, what's that word, where people are just like, people in the fans are just telling the fighters
armchair
what
quarterbacks
to do. Yeah, armchair quarterback, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, and they're just like telling Rory what to do, and it's like, this guy is like an elite fighter, and yeah,
no,
everything
he
that he tried.
Punched him in the face, man.
Yeah.
In the face. Hit him. Hit him. Yeah. Hit him. Hit him. No, hit him. No, hit him. Hit him. Hit
That's
him.
That's what it's like.
Hit him. Hit him. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, YG, I would like to enter it into the official record that I'm disappointed in you for not going to the WMCQ.
All right.
You have let your country down.
I would like to say that you would have probably scrubbed out, done nothing, like Wolfage, and that I think that it's good that you're taking a break from Magic.
Yeah. A lot of people were doing what you just did, Jay, except that some of them had funny enough voices that it wasn't annoying to me. It was actually making me laugh.
Yeah.
It's like, so it had that type of effect. It was an enjoyable time.
You know,
and
a movie, a sweet, maybe not even like a sweet movie, but just like a sweet internet viral video, is get like James Franco and fucking that guy that always does shit with him. What's that guy's name?
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen, yeah. And get them to like go to UFC and do that. It's like ever, like, hey, shoot it. Shoot. 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 No, shit. Shoot. Ah, fuck, he got it. He got it from me. Why didn't you shoot, idiot? Like, shoot. And then it'd be really hilarious to, like, at the end, have those guys get, like, they win some prize, and they get, like, invited back or whatever. And then they're like, hey, Rory, like, great fight, man. I don't know if you could hear me out there, but I was yelling, hit him. And, like, there are some times there where you just didn't hit him. What's that about? Because that never no one ever says that. It would be hilarious. Fuck. Like,
it would be. And, you know, Hain himself was disappointed in me, just like you were, Matt. And I think good. I would feel it was a disservice if I felt the player that ultimately won was worse than me. I would feel like, oh, man, I let the country down, I guess, in the egotistical kind of way. But luckily enough, no questions asked. Like, the person that ultimately won is way better than me at this moment.
That's true.
That has been true. By a significant margin, just has accomplished way more, and that's Jacob Wilson. Outside of Alexander Hain in the WMCQ, I'm not sure if there's, like, Hain was still playing, even though he's way ahead in the pro points race, but there's still a chance that, you know, Pascal Maynard can top 8 the next PT, or a lot of other things could happen so that Hain would not captain the team. Sean McLaren could do something and unseat him. So he was still playing. But outside of him, Jacob Wilson's probably the most decorated Canadian that there is left in that room. And he managed to take it down with green, white tokens. And even in top 8, there was 2 people from Halifax, Doug McGuire and finalist Blair Murray-Clark. I was surprised because those guys drove way down from the East to get to this tournament. And a guy I've been talking up a lot, Dave Schneier, he actually topped Ford and lost to Jacob Wilson in 3 games. He was leading 1-0, lost game 3 due to keeping, perhaps, some people said it was like a sketchy 2-lander on the play and didn't
mullet,
hit his...
Mullet, why are you mulling? Mullet.
And he's a guy I've been talking up a lot because he wrote that Esper tokens control type of deck, and once I posted it on Reddit, a lot of people were obviously skeptical, and everyone who's seen the list is skeptical about the consistency of his deck. But like I said, he's won 2 PTQs with it, pre-TQs rather, and he's finals other ones and top 8 and many other ones, and here he is again. I believe it was 168 players, 8 round tournament with some of the biggest names in Magic in Canada, and he was once again able to find success. So there's probably, I would guess, there's something to his deck, and I would definitely, I've said it before, I'll say it again to check that out. I think that maybe with better luck, he would have taken down Jacob. But Jacob ends up taking it, and I think he played a rather stock list, something that there's nothing really that sticks out as super innovative, except that I think permanently, I think it's been a while now. And Matt, have you been playing Standard a lot to know?
I have not.
Okay. I think they've moved away. They've permanently moved away from having Tragic Arrogance as the answer in their sideboard. And I've seen them all change into Planar Outbursts. And I'm seeing Linvala, the Preserver, being a standard in the sideboard of the Green-White Tokens deck.
Okay. Everything, you know why that is?
Seems pretty stock. I think they felt Tragic was always too... I guess they felt it was never good enough.
Okay.
But as for Linvala, I think they just wanted an extra flyer against a lot of the matchups where you're over-reliant on Archangel Avacyn to get through, such as like decks that are super good at clogging up the ground is obviously like a slightly bad matchup, or just a bad matchup in general, is four color rights, where ultimately they have these visionaries, they have these sifters, all these guys that make a bunch of crappy 1/1s that slow you down, and then it slows you down enough for them to combo you out. So definitely you need a way out, and I think more flying is necessary. And always, and even against those bat decks, flying seems to be the trump card. When people started playing Eldrazi Skyspawner in the bat company mirror, just in order to win it. So I think that's why I haven't played enough. I plan to jam his list maybe on Moto this week and figure it out. But congratulations to him. Super, super deserved. And it's funny to see him getting interviewed at the very end, because he's known, at least in the MTG community, of being a man of not too many words. So Tony was definitely trying his very best to say a lot while he's like, yeah, I'm happy. but it's a great start. If we got Hayne and Wilson, it's a huge start. But like we've said in previous years, where we had Hayne and Sean McLaren and Daniel Fournier, and we didn't pass it to the next round, but hopefully this is yet another great start. On Friday, though, for people that wanted to play the WMCQ, you needed like either to have some sort of player level or 500 Planeswalker points during the season, or you could win a last chance qualifier that we were hosting on Friday. Now, three people showed up for it.
Oh no!
So we could not fire it. Okay, I called WotC. You need at least 8.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, last year we fired at least 2, and I was wondering why. And there were some modifications in the rules. Last year, even if you were qualified, I love you, Pig Sofa. Even if you're qualified, you can play these. You can play these and win it to earn yourself a bye. Now, you have to not be qualified. Like, even if you're qualified, you cannot, not even if you're qualified. If you're qualified, you can't play at all. So that reduced the amount of people that wanted to play these.
Okay.
And it's like, the thing is, the people that would want to play in a WMCQ are more than likely to have at least 500 Planeswalker points. Like, there's not that many people, and that would have to, not only that, they would have to be there on a Friday if the WMCQ is on the Saturday. So it's like, is there a scenario where people would travel for an LCQ? No, but maybe one guy would tag along if like all his friends are qualified for WMCQ and he was willing to hang out even if he lost on Friday, maybe. But we had that challenge, and it was sad in a way, because those three people I assumed wanted to have at least a shot to try to win it, but they couldn't. And I think I've seen other people do it differently, where they do push the WMCQ on a Sunday so that they could have the LCQ on a Saturday. But, you know, a lot of times the people who are only strictly playing the WMCQ appreciate that it's on a Saturday, because they like to travel like Friday night or whatever and then be able to leave on Sunday and have a day's rest and go back to work on Monday. So
yeah,
it's definitely that type of challenge. How's it going, Jer? What do you think about the LCQ system?
I think it's neat. It's good to be on, guys. Sorry, I just had a thing with my dad. I haven't had a chance to see him since Father's Day or for Father's Day because work has been just long hours as of late. But yeah, the LCQ system, like, it was good before because you could play for the buys and everybody was really incentivized to play it. But I know, like, talk at our store, there's a couple F&M grinders, like guys who are good at Magic, but they only play a few times a year. Like, they're interested in doing the LCQ thing because they haven't been able to work up the points because they don't play F&Ms. They don't really play PPTQs, but they like playing Magic and they like big tournaments and they like showing up every now and then. So I think we'll probably get, I don't know, maybe double digits. Like, if we had 16 people at the one that's going to be happening at the Warp one, I think that would be a really good turnout, but it's probably going to be closer to like 10 or 12, I'm guessing. Because there's a few people who are either relatively new to getting back into the game or have just started playing and they're just shy of their 500. There's probably going to be a hanger along like you were talking about, KYT. But getting rid of the buy really just got everybody else out of that tournament. And then there's the other part of it, which is, yeah, it's happening during the day on a Friday.
Yeah.
So, like, I know Magic tournaments, like, there's something in their DNA that they have to be negative value to participate. And I'm like, if you want to go to a GP, you've got to buy a plane ticket. You've got to get a hotel room. You've got to do all this stuff. And your prize payout might cover some of it, you know, if you do prize. So I think it just comes with the territory.
Right. I love having you on the show, Jer. I was, before you came on, I talked about me spending Saturday UFC and with the boys, and one of them was the man Genie, and yeah. I just found out that he does basically the best, unless you have a friend who does it better, the best Jeremy Schofield impression. I'm going to have Kyle edit it in.
It was so good.
It's so good.
I even did you a favor. I did my version of it too.
Yeah, yeah. Jeremy sends his version, and then we play it back and forth, and like, man, Andrew has it basically 95% of the way. It's like insane.
Yeah, it was so good.
Oh, did you listen to it too, Jay?
I did. Yeah, I got a Facebook message. I had to go onto Facebook to listen to it, but it was worth it.
It's like, oh yeah, oh yeah,
oh yeah.
See, like, oh, yeah. I'm like basically dead. Oh man,
I'm just no. I just died. That's
I just
life.
Died.
Oh,
it
is
oh,
funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just died. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just died.
It's actually really funny because I think the more that I work construction, the more East Coast my accent gets. Because that is definitely like an East Coast Canadian accent. Like, I'm becoming one of the guys. No, that's just it. It's all the Cape Bretoners and stuff like that that you work with.
On Sunday we had our 3K Montreal Open. It was a modern tournament. Sadly, no Red Green Ponza made the top eight. I don't know if anybody played it.
But that's a coverage. Real deck.
That is, I think it is. I think Ifro wrote about it. It must be a real deck.
I think he was like 80%, he said, against every deck in the
world. Oh, God. Oh, God. I think
pretty good.
I think he was 7-9.
7-9. I think. Actually, if I remember correctly, it was 7-9. Which is pretty good when you consider like 82%.
This topic we saw again. Every now and then I'm taken off guard because it's not really talked about as a top win deck. But in these Canadian tournaments, like, Elves made its appearance again. There's two copies in the top eight. And it was ultimately won by a guy named Frédéric Asselin, who took Abzan Company. And I was just dropping by. There was cover to the event on Sunday after waking up super late on Saturday. There was video coverage all weekend, and some of the guys needed a bit of a breather. So I decided to sit in for a few rounds just to help out. I like
so you haven't played
a bit. I wouldn't say so. because Tony, either Tony or Rob Anderson, were basically carrying me. Were like they were just locked in, I guess, for, well, Tony's been doing it for a long time, and Rob was probably locked in from doing it for most of the day, just like super play-by-play plus strategy on top of it. And, you know, I was just there so that they wouldn't be bored, I guess, of being solo. And watching some of the matches in Modern, it was interesting how some of the matchups were just came down to both decks having specific key creatures, but neither deck having that much removal. So what I mean is one of the matches that I covered was Bant Eldrazi against the Bant Coral Helm combo.
Okay.
So with Bant Eldrazi, you had specific creatures that the other deck really has a hard time racing against, which is like Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher. And on the other side, the Coral Helm combo, you have the Knight of the Royal Quarry Retreat combo. But both sides don't really have that much removal. So the Bant Eldrazi deck only has like four paths in its main, and then it has like one dismember extra that it brings in to try to stop the Knight combo. And likewise, from the other side, the Coral Helm combo, you only play four paths as well. So when the Bant Eldrazi deck has like those crazy starts where they start jamming 4/4s and 5/5s, you know, it's really hard to deal with, and usually they just need that one path to slow things down a lot. And same thing I saw with other decks with elves. Sometimes it's they just play a lot of dumb dudes, and then there's like a few key dudes that you really need to kill. And I felt just, at least this top eight, a lot of matchups came down to that, where there's just a lot of creatures and just not that much removal. And elves, you don't even have removal, so you couldn't even interact. So when the elves deck in the finals went up against Abzan Company, when Abzan Company had the infinite life combo, you know, the elves deck just, you know, couldn't do anything. Just, you know, just scooped, basically.
Yeah.
Because they have nothing. They basically need to rely from their sideboard. Maybe they could do, like, I'm looking at it, Phyrexian Revoker. I don't know. I was talking to Tony, and Tony says that in his deck, his elves list, he's playing some number of dismember, so he could have some amount of interaction. But to me, it's always interesting. There's always that tension of, do you want to interact, or do you want to just keep your combo going, your engine? Do you want to diminish your engine just to be able to fight their engine, or do you want to keep your engine as efficient as possible? And I think it depends on your deck, and I'm not really sure how to answer that question, but it's always an interesting question, depending on the matchup you face. But have you seen much elves when you were playing, Matt?
Yeah, I'm surprised that you were surprised, honestly.
Yeah.
Elves is always, I played it in the top eight of states. It's always a deck that I expect to see in some number or other in the top eight and top 16. It's always been very good, and it just keeps getting better with Coco and Sylvan Messenger and cards like that. So, but you are correct in that it is very difficult for it to play removal, and that sometimes it can splash white for path. Most of the time, though, it plays dismembers. And then you occasionally can get something with a Thoughtseize, but it's not as a reliable plan as they would like.
Well, we did see one funny thing was, you get to see a lot of people get really tired from playing during the day, that they, you know, start to keep really sketchy hands. Like the Elves player, I know he's a friend of mine, Bert. In game two of a game, he kept, with his Elves deck, he kept five lands and like an Elvish Mystic. And we're just like, what the heck are you doing? And obviously promptly died. And so there was a lot of sketchy keeps. Even for someone like me who hasn't followed Modern that closely. And but that's the cool thing about coverage, gives a lot of people a chance to look back at things that they did wrong. He also missed, let's say, a lot of Nettle Sentinel triggers, of untap triggers. And, you know, it just gives you an opportunity, if you're able to look back at yourself, even if it's super embarrassing, just be able to look back and see all the bad mistakes. I think it's a lot helpful. And so super shout out to PD Pablo again, and Tony and Rob and other PD Pablo, I guess, from Toronto Store for being super awesome, for being on camera the entire weekend. They did a great job.
Did you actually do commentary?
I did, but I wouldn't say I did. Like, in a way, I sat there for a few rounds. I physically sat there, and you saw me at one point. Okay. So that's all I'm
going to
say.
You were basically KYT on the podcast.
I was basically KYT, and Justin Richardson was saying, like, it's exactly because everyone noticed that when I came on, 200 people, they like, the viewership went from 300 to 500, and J. Rich made the comment that it's like me on the A-Team. Like, both things are popular, but I don't talk on either show, yet they're popular. So it was kind of funny that when he made that comment. As for the Open, we have the Toronto Open and one in Saskatoon this upcoming weekend, which is kind of crazy. I think it's the first time we go to Saskatoon. And after that, we're going
to
hit up
Red Deer in Saskatoon.
Oh, maybe under the MDSS mask. But
I think under the Man in the Pride logo, you guys went to Saskatoon once.
Yeah. When it was an MDSS. So it'll be the first F2F. Then there's the Edmonton Red Deer one. Then we have the Edmonton one. So lots of exciting stuff. Have you been playing any Magic Gear, or has work been still crushing you?
Work is crushing me, but I have tried to jam. Like on Father's Day, my wife was just like, go play some Magic. So I went and finished off a Modern League. And that's pretty much what I've been doing. I'm getting myself geared up. I'm going to do another PPTQ this weekend, because I get a couple days off, so that'll be exciting.
What format is it?
I think it's sealed. All the PPTQs right now are sealed. So,
is it SOI or Eternal Master?
This one is SOI.
Okay.
But the weekend after is an Eternal Masters one.
Okay.
Oh, man. So. That's too baller for me, man.
Yeah. So Eternal Masters one, I think it's also like infinite dollars.
Okay.
You know, casually infinite dollars.
Yeah, ours is 50, and I haven't decided whether I'm going or not. But I was actually going to segue into this a little bit. Eternal Masters is fun. If you guys have a chance to draft it, definitely do it. And for all the listeners out there, blue red is pretty insane. That archetype is super deep, in that it goes all the way down to their common, like all of the, you can have a blue right red deck that is very good and has no rares in it.
Oh.
And it's pretty sweet. You can make it synergistic with Burning Vengeance, or you can make it one like I had, where it was kind of just this blue red control deck with the only synergies it had was a blue Honden, a red Honden, and then splash for a green Honden. But it's very, very good.
It turns out my tournament's a standard tournament, so what's good in standard?
Oh, okay.
Play white tokens.
Yeah.
play what Jacob played. Probably. It's probably more than good enough.
Cash, I'll do just as well, you know.
I'm sure.
No separation there.
I'm sure. Oh. I mean, either that or like the deck I talked up, I would just give it a try. I'm really, because no one's picking up my friend Dave Schneider's deck, who he ultimately finished top four and lost to Jacob in three. And if you're looking for something funky to play,
control deck, right?
Yeah, if you're looking for something funky to play, that's the one I would recommend for
list
sure.
List me, bro.
Oh, I will.
I want to play it. I just don't have a lot of the Esper mythics.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is I have the Esper mythics. I don't have the green-white tokens. The other thing I could play is the old Mike Lewis Super Friends deck that was crushing tournaments until he won his PPTQ. That's the one that we had posted on the show a while back there.
Right.
I don't think I've heard either.
And versions of it has seen success. Maybe, and you said he's like a killer deck builder, so.
Yeah, but I'm interested to see the Esper list. I'll take a look at both of them and go from there.
Sounds good. Jay, have you been playing anything? No. Talk about your crazy work life.
Yeah, I got my crazy work life. I just been trying to work on like kind of the Commander Cube a bit, and I actually was toying around with this idea actually that you guys can tell me how terrible and OP you think it is, because I know that you will say that. But I was thinking about a mechanic. Actually, two things. So one is where you add tap. I don't know if it would be your mana pool. It'd be something. I just use mana pool because it makes it easier. Although I'm sure now Matt will ask me some stupid question about it, which makes it not easier. But I'm playing with this idea where you can, yeah, you can add tap to your mana pool. So for example, you could use that on, say, draw card to discard card. So you would already have the tap symbol. You could use it like mana. So effectively, your looter becomes either free or like you could use it while he was tapped already.
It took me a while to get up to speed with what the hell you were trying to say there, but I get what you're doing.
Yeah, so like, you know how you have something like Llanowar Elves? Let's say Llanowar Elves says tap to add green. Instead of adding green, it just says tap to add tap. Let's say that, right? So then, like, you could easily use it on, like, there's probably ways you can make it degenerate, but you could easily use it on, you know, something like crazy, like a fucking, like an Arcanist or something to just draw three cards for free.
Tap to add tap? I'm still not.
So calling. What
is this? Is the problem?
Okay, so
this
is the problem. This
is the problem with mechanics, is that the Magic players always get like hung up on the stuff that literally doesn't matter at all. So it could be an artifact, it could be a land, it could be an enchantment, it could be like literally anything that adds something to your mana pool. So just for a minute, Mendoza, imagine that it is a Llanowar Elf.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay,
for the
so you
listeners
know,
at home, just wait, let me do it.
You're doing a fantastic job not explaining it to him, so I'm trying to help you out, but
okay,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. So some cards have costs to do things, right?
Correct. Or Folklore.
Instant Neonate. You discard a card, and you sacrifice it, and you get something.
Okay.
Other cards have different costs. So one of the costs that's commonly on cards is to tap the card.
Okay.
So there'll be a tap symbol, the semicolon, and then you get the effect. What Jay's proposing is a way to generate that tap symbol so you can bank a tap. So you don't actually have to tap the creature because you've already got a tap in the bank that you would use up.
Mm.
So it's kind of like, instead of tapping this card, this artifact, this creature, whatever like that, you can generate the tap from something else and leave that thing untapped. But get the effect. You can use it.
Can you explain it a little bit more clearly?
No.
I don't understand the concept of generating a tap, banking it.
This is the issue. So Magic players never get this, ever. Anytime you make a new mechanic, Magic players get
it.
Like I said, the way that I was explaining it would have worked really well, because Mendoza is not a judge. So the way you explained it is technically rules.
Mendoza
correct.
Is a judge.
Oh, well, that's embarrassing. So
yeah,
you explained it really well.
Months ago, buddy.
You explained it really well in that, like, I feel like it, like any judge should be able to understand what's going on because it was like in the rules. But I don't know, whatever. Like, I've already tried to explain this to like, three people, and they just don't understand it. It's not that difficult of a concept.
Okay, can I try? So, can I try real quick?
Yes, I'm trying to fucking explain it to you. So imagine you have a Llanowar Elf, right?
Okay.
Llanowar Elf's ability is what?
It taps for green mana.
Right, it taps for green mana. Now imagine if it didn't tap for green mana. Imagine if it tapped for two life. Right? Following?
Okay.
Now how did you get the mana, and how did you get the life? You tapped the card, right? The Llanowar Elf has to tap, right?
Correct.
Fine. Right?
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. So now imagine if you had your five colors of magic plus generic mana plus colorless mana, right? Now imagine that you also generate the tap symbol. Imagine that the sixth color of magic, let's say, was the tap symbol. So imagine if you had an enchantment that said at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add, and then it had the little tap symbol on the magic card, to your mana pool.
Okay.
Right, Fallen?
Okay, you mind if I just try to figure this out? So, for example, I can play a Llanowar Elf on turn one. And if I don't have something to use the mana for on turn two, I can tap it to add a tap to my mana pool to bank that tap mana, a tap, to use it to...
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if, like, that's all like cards that would interact with this functionality. I'm trying to just explain to
you. Okay. Okay. I was basically confused because how I read the explanation was that, so for example, if say you played a Worn Power Stone, you could then, because you had a tap in the bank, tap your Llanowar Elf for two colorless mana, being that Worn Power Stone was in play, and I didn't think that was what you meant.
Yeah, see, now I'm confused.
Okay.
Because
you guys,
because
are
not...
like really, because what Mendoza's thinking about, Jay, is he's thinking about the practical use of it. You guys both understand the basic concept. Obviously, Jay understands it because it's his design idea. But yeah, the tapping is actually a resource. I think where Jay's going with it, that's different than you, Mendoza, is that things that tap can't just generate taps. It's just
I'm not
other people generate the taps, and they can be used.
Trying to like just cheat magic by saying like, oh yeah, Llanowar Elf can either tap for green or can bank taps, because that would be fucking ridiculous. Can you imagine if just for seven turns you just bank taps and then you played an Arcanist and then just drew fucking 40 cards?
Okay.
At the same time, that would be a really cool card that like it gains any tap effect on creature or permanent that you control.
Yeah. So if I'm understanding this correctly, then do creatures with tap abilities now also have the ability to add a tap to your tap?
No, it doesn't matter. Okay. Like I said, you're going too deep. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
That doesn't matter, right? You can make any card, right? You can make any card that says tap to add mana to your mana pool, right?
Yeah.
Like before, it used to just be lands, and then it was creatures like Llanowar Elf, and then it became artifacts like Moxes, and then, right? Now you have enchantments, like you have Frontier Siege that adds mana to your mana pool, right? So like that's literally irrelevant. Right? What I'm trying to figure out, what I was asking about, was whether or not you guys thought the concept of being able to add taps to your mana pool is broken enough. So like the ability...
I think it's super broken.
It's the ability to use a card that needs to tap as part of the cost for free. So for example, Merfolk Looter says tap to loot, right? Now a lot of people don't use their looter to attack because they want to loot at the end of your turn, right? So I say go, you do all your dumb shit on your turn, you say go, and then I say at the end of your turn I'm going to loot, right? Now if I had attack, I obviously couldn't loot because my Merfolk Looter is tapped. But if you have the tap symbol as a resource that you can use similar to mana, then your tapped Merfolk Looter doesn't need to tap anymore because you're substituting that with the tapped payment already. You have the dollar coin. Does that make sense? Okay. So it doesn't matter if it's a looter. It doesn't matter if it's a Llanowar Elf. That's irrelevant. Don't think of that. That's stupid. Don't think of that. You're doing it wrong. I'm just trying to figure out if the design space there is worth looking into. Like Jeremy said, he thinks that's really broken.
I do. I think it's a very, very powerful effect.
I kind of like it.
Well, I think it's cool, but I think it's broken as hell.
I think it's cool, and it would depend on how you're going to cost these tap generators, basically. But I like the whole design of a banked resource. I kind of like that.
So like now, I remember that Jeremy brought up that it's a banked resource. I didn't. I said you add it to your mana pool. The reason that I said mana pool is because at the end of every phase and every step, your mana pool empties, right?
Right.
So, I was looking at it similar to, similar to actual mana, where, like, you cannot just bank fucking nine of these tap things.
By banking it, though. Like, you bank mana, you put mana in your mana pool, and then it clears at the end of the phase.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is, like, words mean stuff. So, with magic players, like, I could say absolute, right? And you know what I mean. I say I loot at the end of your turn. You know what I mean, right? But you can't write a magic card that says tap symbol, colon, loot, right? Because then people get into all this sort of stupid debate. So I just wanted to make sure that it was clear, because I knew what Jeremy meant, but it sounds like KYT thought that you meant, like, literally bank it. Like, you could save up fucking five taps, and then, you know, they alpha strike you, and then you just, like, use your royal assassin to fucking...
That's what Jerry meant.
No, goodness, no. No, that's even more broken. That's even more broken. That's
reasonably
broken.
That's ridiculously broken.
Yeah.
But this discussion so far has been pretty good, because, you know, we haven't talked about the mechanic at all, and everybody doesn't understand it. So, what I've learned is that this mechanic probably isn't great.
No, I think that it is interesting. I think that there are ways within the rules already to do the same thing more elegantly. So, for example, if your goal is to use tap abilities of creatures and artifacts and lands and all of that stuff while they're tapped, or to get extra uses out of them, why not just make cards or enchantments that give you extra use of those? Does that make sense?
Tap to untap a permanent. Or you make something like you...
Oh, yeah. So let's say that I attack you with my Merfolk Looter, right?
Okay.
So I'm attacking you. You're dying. I'm killing you. Then you attack me. So then I have a card that says untap target creature. So I could untap this card, and I could use my looter to block. Then I could loot, and I've effectively gotten two uses out of my magical card. I do not want that. I simply want to be able to loot while my card is tapped. Or I want to be able to loot twice. Or I want to be able to loot for free, for example. So if I generate a tap symbol, and then I loot with that tap symbol, I can then still have a blocker.
Well, I'm telling you that you can. So, for example, in those situations, if you wanted to create an enchantment that says, at any time, you may use use an ability of a permanent you control that requires a tap with no additional mana cost and once per turn.
That doesn't sound more elegant.
I mean, it's a way, it adds a wordy card. I mean, that is just one example, and I'm sure it can be streamlined, but I think that it's an interesting concept that just can be done without complicating things further.
Why does that complicate things further?
It adds a whole... you add a tap to your mana pool. Sort of
thing.
That's
not difficult to understand. Like, when they brought in the Wingding mana, it wasn't that difficult to understand, right?
Was kind of difficult for people to understand. There was a lot of confusion, whether you heard it or not.
Right. No, there was. But what I'm saying is that it wasn't that difficult to understand once somebody just actually listened to what the person was saying, right? To what Wizards was saying. Like, people understand now, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's the same with this. It's like, people aren't listening to what I'm trying to say. So, like, as soon as I say that, people say, like, oh, is this a land? Is this a, like, sorry, you're banking stuff on your Llanowar Elf? It's like, I didn't say any of that, right? So once it's explained to you and shown, I think, on a magic card, it's probably a lot easier to understand. Because this is just something that's never been done before, right?
Yeah,
this is
the same as, like, perfectly understand you.
They printed haste as a keyword, right? And there's, like, rules text that goes with haste that you have to understand, right? Except for that, like, they printed cards before that said this card's unaffected by summoning sickness, right?
Yeah.
So it, like, streamlined it a little bit. So rather than make, like, every single card that basically just gives my guys vigilance, which is not what I want, or lets me use tap abilities for free, which is not what I want.
Oh, Jay, I don't think it would be. I don't think it would be too broken, honestly, because they can only be used in the same way that mana can be used. I would just like to see it applied. I don't think that. I think that it could go one way or the other. It could be too complicated of a rules change to apply to magic as a whole, or it could be easier. You know, it could not be. I could see it going both ways. I just need to see some cards, because I don't, especially if these tap abilities, they do, if they don't have cost associated to them. So, for example, if you're not using an ability like Thespian, let's just say Thespian Stage, for example, has two tap. If you're not being allowed to get that two mana, just the tap symbol, I could definitely see it being fine. So, yeah. If that makes sense.
Right. Anyway, KYT, that's all I've been doing.
Okay. I kind of like it. I think it would, if it randomly got introduced in the real Magic world, someone's going to think up the most broken combo if there was a way to like get taps at a decent price, and there's probably some kind of crazy loop you can do with it.
Yeah, I'm assuming so, there is.
Yeah, so I think it's a sweet idea.
I was just thinking of it more like Investigate, right? So you have cards that do something, and then you just add this as like almost like a cantrip, right? So you have like, let's say you had Thought Scour, which is like draw card, target player mills two.
Uh-huh.
So what if you had like draw card, add tap to your mana?
Okay, sorry, I missed that altogether. What was your card?
I was just using like Thought Scour as an example. Like I was saying, like I was interesting to think about design wise in terms of like cantrip or like ponder. Okay. Right? So instead of draw a card or instead of the reshuffle effect or instead of like the whatever, you had add tap.
Yeah. And you want to do it on like instants and sorceries.
Doesn't matter, sure. Let's say that I do.
Okay, because on instants and sorceries, like if you do it with an existing permanent,
for simplicity of conversation and ease, because this is just fucking painful. Let's continue.
Well, then let's not talk about it. That's even less fucking painful. Like seriously, this is your discussion. If it's too fucking painful, don't talk about it.
Jay,
we're trying to improve your life here, buddy. We don't have to be those cube guys. If it's too fucking painful, we just won't talk about it.
Jay, let's move on. What's going on? We understand.
You guys see
Emrakul? Let's move on.
Did you see Emrakul? Was it cool? We don't have a long show here today, folks. We're doing it for Kyle, so if it's fucking painful, let's move on.
Jay, we understand your ability.
No, we're moving on.
Letting you know. I get it.
Yeah, okay, great. You should say that. I've already said it like four times, and get it.
Oh, okay, that proves that I don't get it. Okay. So, yes, we are having a shorter show because Kyle is moving. Kyle is moving, right? That's what he's doing?
Yes, he is probably a member of the one family on Earth that's excited to move to Winnipeg. So,
oh fuck yeah!
The geographical center of North America. Did you guys know that?
No.
Yep. The geographical center of the United States.
Did you look that up?
Is in Lebanon. No, there's a documentary called My Winnipeg, because Errol Morris, the documentarian, is from Winnipeg, and he did a whole documentary about it.
Ooh,
you watched a documentary about Winnipeg?
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's called My Winnipeg. I know all about the hockey team that was there and how it was.
It is there now.
Oh, it's still there now?
No, it came back.
Okay.
Well, it didn't really come back. They took a different team and made it.
Replaced. Yeah,
the job.
Okay. But major league team, right? Or is it?
It is.
Which we don't call the NHL major league. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not an MLB team. It's
correct.
It's hockey.
Correct. The hockey team that is there is not a Major League Baseball team.
Okay, so it is a Division I team.
It is a...
like a Premier League team?
It is the How do you even do this?
I have no idea, man. See? Let's just move on.
Move on. Fuck Kyle.
We've got to have a show like that. We got to have... what's that sports show where they have like... the timer in the corner, and you got like 30 seconds.
Interruption.
Yeah.
Pardon the interruption.
PTI.
Yeah, we need that.
That would actually be a great KYT job. You could just press the button.
Yeah, we need that. That's
your job. What do you guys think of Emrakul for real? Last topic. What do we all think about Emrakul for real?
I'm not super excited.
Very good.
I don't know.
It seems like it's obviously worse than the original Emrakul. That goes without saying.
It's going to cost, on average, probably, what, 8 or 9, I would imagine?
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. It's gonna be very... For a Mind Flayer effect and a fatty? Sign me up, I think. Yeah. But
I mean, they get
a full Mind Flayer because
What?
Yeah, part of the Mind Flayer.
What, Jay?
I was just gonna say, like, it's I don't know how good the old Mind Flayer is when, like, I guess, like, they get an extra turn, right? They get two turns in a row for your one Mind Flayer turn. Like,
I don't know
you just want to play this when you can kill them.
No, what it is that when you Mind Flayer a person, you take their turn, so you essentially time walk because they don't get a turn in between your turns.
Yeah, but Emrakul says that they get a turn after that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you take their turn, you do nothing with it, so that turn doesn't count, and then they get a proper turn before you get your turn back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't get, like, you don't get Mind Flayer turn, like your turn where you Mind Flayer them, and then they get two turns. No, it's your turn, their Mind Flayer turn, their bonus turn where they're in control, and then your turn again. So yeah, that's where it's like a gimped version of Mind Flayer, is that they actually get an untap, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Mind Flayer was broken.
Yeah, I think I think that's going to make all the difference, is that I don't think in standard there will be a lot of situations where you can completely ravage your opponent on the Mind Flayer return and then basically make them completely ill-equipped to do anything on their next turn. Because I think of a deck like Green-White Tokens, for example.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Like, not activate their Planeswalkers?
Yeah, and, like, not attack, I guess?
Well, you could cast, like, you can cast summon spells and do nothing useful with them. Like, you can do bad things with their Planeswalkers.
Sure.
Like, you could put +1/+1 counters on nothing. You can cast the whatever the X spell that makes tokens for, like, zero. You can do some stupid stuff. You can't do the crazy stupid stuff where, like, you would make terrible attacks into, you know, them to being all tapped out so that you could alpha them the next turn. But you can still have, like, their junky tokens attack into your better creatures and, like, kill a whole bunch of their tokens. And you can do some stuff with it.
Yeah, you can waste Dromoka's Command. You can Declaration. Can you Declaration and stone your own guys?
Sure, you could make Gideon into a creature and then declaration it. I don't know, that exile, so it would work.
Yeah, there's a few things.
Yeah, there's a few things. Against the sacrifice style decks and all that stuff that are using like husks and whatever, like that style deck, like this card would just wreck them.
Yeah.
Sure. And this is all best case scenario stuff though.
But, well, that's a legitimate top tier one deck, though. Like, that's the thing, is I'm not talking
about... Those decks aren't playing Husk right now. They're playing...
Well, they're playing a Sacrifice Outlet.
No, they're only playing Brood Monitor. That's it.
Well, then you just sack all the tokens.
Okay. But I think... I'm waiting with bated breath. I think it could be... It has potential... I don't think in Eternal formats, you get a lot more power to do. Mind Flayer can just make your Storm opponent go off and do nothing and completely basically make him lose the game. Whereas in Standard, I don't know if we're going to see that same sort of powerful effect.
No, you won't.
With this Emrakul.
You won't. I mean, even if they reprinted fucking... just Mind Flayer, you wouldn't see that either. The thing that is worse about this is that they get their turn back, right? Like, at least with Mind Flayer, you could lock them, and then, like, at the very not lock, at least you're just time walking them, but here you're not even getting a free time walk out of it because they get their turn back, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the power of an effect like that, is that tapping down their blockers so that they can't attack, you can attack with your attackers. I'm trying to think of a deck where you'd have to play this, I think, in a fairly creature heavy deck, right? Because against a lot of the aggressive decks in the format, or even the creature based decks in the format, you have to make them attack into your dudes so that you can kill something, right? Am I misunderstanding the situation incorrectly?
Well, I think the part that a lot of people are missing is that it's a 13/13 flying trample protection from instance also. It's a Mind Flayer with a body. You know,
oh, yeah, that's, yeah, for sure.
That's,
I mean,
the part is that it is a big fucking creature. And that big fucking creature, like, so it's got protection from instant, so that's where having that bonus turn to go in there, like, okay, their only way to kill it, their sorcery speed removal, you get the turn next. So if they've got sorcery speed removal, that sorcery speed removal kills one of their own shitty creatures or one of your other shitty creatures.
Yeah.
And then this thing gets to come in and smash in. Like, the cheap Mindslaver effect, one of the best things that it's going to do is it's going to make sure that Emrakul has to die to a top deck effect. That it's going
that
to...
That is true. That is true.
And, like, that's the part is that, like, it's not the... whatever that shitty black mythic was that did the Mindslaver effect, and it's not a Mindslaver, but it does have the ability to win a game, and it doesn't necessarily need to be in a super creature heavy deck, because we already have Eldrazi decks, like big stupid ramp Eldrazi decks that are playing big stupid cards that get out there because it can load up the battlefield with sorcery speed removal and all these other types of things. Like, you could see this being in some sort of weird delirium style deck that's already running the exile a whole bunch of creatures to put angels into play or whatever the case. Like, it'll be like some sort of junk delirium that just happens to have, like, its big win condition top end being an Emrakul that just shows up out of nowhere and fucks everybody's shit up.
Yeah. I see it like that.
Yeah. And so, the last piece to it is I'm no longer afraid of the 13 mana cost on this, because I just remember Dig Time and Treasure Cruise, and everybody, when the spells were done up, well, it's fucking 8 mana. How good can it be? It's fucking 8 mana. Like, I don't care if we have the ability, if we knock that thing down to 7 or 8 mana, this is a really powerful card. At 13 mana, it's fucking garbage. Like, you can't play this. You can't just throw it in any deck. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily work that well with Nahiri. It is a 13-point kind of fireball off of a Nahiri ultimate. But you don't get that cast of effect, right? Like, again, it's one of the Eldrazi colorless, so you have to cast it to get the ability.
Yeah, I don't think that the Delve comparison is quite accurate in this case.
Oh, it's not as direct. It's definitely not as direct, but it's understanding that cost-reducing effects do actually have an impact in games, especially when you're doing constructed decks that build around that. So if we're going to build around Delirium, if we're going to build around it, like, this is a really, really interesting tool, top-end bomb-type thing to kind of finish out that game. In something like Modern, I don't know if the card is as good. I think it's better, like, a standard format.
Yeah, like, would you play this in, like, Tron?
I don't think so.
Well, reasonably, so for example, on turn 3, we can assume that you'll probably have an artifact and you'll probably have a sorcery, because of all of the star effects and all of the Sylvan Scrying and Ancient Stirring effects, and even Pyroclasm, for example.
Yeah.
So that means that you will more than likely, if you want to cast it on turn 3, you won't be able to.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of the, well, yeah, you won't be able to cast it on turn 3. Casting it on turn 3 is a little presumptuous. Thank you.
All right, but that's like the turn, right? For Tron, I was trying to figure out why he was mentioning that, but that's why.
Yeah. That's the Karn turn, but, like, you think of, like, the Ulamog turn. Like, let's say that we're having a really, really good day and we're going to get our Urzatron on 3 and we're going to put a second tower down on 4. Let's pretend we're in this wonderful Christmas land. Then, you know, maybe you're in a position where you get to cast him on, or cast it on 4, on turn 4, and do a bunch of stuff. But even if it's 10 mana, I'd rather cast Ulamog.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that Ulamog, the exile 2 permanent effect is so, being that it's so versatile, it's so powerful.
Mm.
You can get rid of 2 creatures to make combat less hairy for you if you're going against an aggressive deck. You can basically start knocking lands out of your control opponent's hands. It's just great.
Jared, when we were discussing the usage of this card, like in Standard, I just realized, I don't think we mentioned, this is like a pseudo removal spell by itself, because you're going to have them attack with their best creature into a 13-13. And I'm seeing this as like, a pseudo removal spell, a big body, like everything else. Like, I actually think this is a really good card now.
Yeah. So the fact that it has protection from instants is really important.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I never realized that. I thought that was just kind of tacked on. But it's so that they have to kill it with their top deck.
They have to kill. Well, they have to kill it with their top deck, and you get the ability to remove sorcery speed removal.
Yeah, that's true.
On their turn before they get a chance to deal with it. So you do have a chance to kind of do one pass through their hand to try and get rid of their ways to kill it. And, you know, it might still be vulnerable to something like an Obi Nix or whatever like that, but you might have the opportunity to, you know, burn off a couple counters to kill something else, so far and so forth. And then, yeah, you do get to attack into the Emrakul and have it die. So it's really interesting. You know, I think flavor-wise, it's super hilarious. It's because you look at the card, the full art version of the card, and it's got like Emrakul just kind of inciting everybody killing themselves. And like that really is kind of what the Mindslaver effect's all about. It's when you turn on yourself, right? So you're going to be wasting removal on your own creatures. You're going to be having your creatures make pointless attacks into things. Your planeswalkers might kill your own creatures. You might Obi Nix kill something. You might do a bunch of stupid shit that's just not good for the greater good to deal with this Emrakul. So I think it's got a little bit of a flavor win in itself. Like that ability, that kind of quasi Mindslaver thing. Yeah. If it was a full Mindslaver, it would just be way too good. Because, yeah.
It should be mentioned, though, that if they smell it coming from, you know, if they smell it coming, then they can hold up their removal for it.
Well, they have to hold up their removal, and then they have to hold up more removal than they have targets for, right? Because if you're casting Emrakul, you're not doing it on turn like 4 when they don't have enough mana to cast 2 sorceries. You're probably casting it when they have enough mana out to cast 2 sorceries or whatever the case may be. You know, like if it's the destroy target creature and planeswalker, it's like maybe you're killing the planeswalker that can deal with Emrakul, or maybe you're killing a creature. Maybe you're killing another creature that buddy has. Like, I would rather they kill my 5/5 or kill my. Well, maybe not my Thought Knots here, but kill something else that I've got, my Worldbreaker, then kill my Emrakul.
Yeah.
Because my Emrakul is going to fly in and bash some face in. And like that 13 points of damage might be what I need to close out the game. But I do like that it has the protection from instant. So you get a chance to kind of clean out. You get a solid chance to get rid of their ways to deal with it. And then they get their draw step and they kind of have their turn to kind of deal with it. And then it's coming on over.
I love it.
Well, we will see.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And, don't think it's great in modern or anything like that, but I think it's going to be a card that we'll see play for sure in standard.
All righty. And since I love you, Kyle, we're going to end it on that. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yes. Thank you very much for listening.
I love you all.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I'm dead. Yeah.
I just died.
Oh,
yeah.